Matt's not here this week, so I'll get straight into things. Our guest this week is Marianne Long, Education Director of the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy and co-founder of the Gills Club. Marianne works to foster the engagement of young girls in the study of sharks, and I was curious to talk to her about the outreach and education events they offer. We also get into a little bit about the funding of research on sharks and the latest kind of research methods. Here's our conversation.
And maybe a good place to get started would be for you just to say a little bit about yourself, your background, and what you do.
Okay. So I am the education director for the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy. And for me, growing up, I loved the ocean. So I knew that I wanted to pursue a degree in marine science or marine biology. So I went to school in South Carolina. I went to Coastal Carolina University, where I majored in marine science. And while there, I had an opportunity to work under Professor Dr. Dan Abel, who took students on a research course to the Bimini Biological Field Station in the Bahamas. So for me, my interest was always just a love for the ocean and a want to, you know, get involved in a field where I could work to conserve it. But when I went on this course, I was never, you know, I went honestly because I thought it would be cool, hang out with sharks. And then I also thought it would be really great to earn college credit in the Bahamas. But my first day there, you know, we were out on a boat and all of a sudden, you know, we were surrounded by a bunch of Caribbean reef sharks, and the instructors and the lab crew was like, okay, hop in, and got right in the water. And I was amazed by their beauty. One of the things a lot of people don't realize is sharks are cartilaginous fish. So their entire skeleton is made out of cartilage. So being able to watch them freely move in the water with the flexibility of their spine, you know, I was captivated and I was completely drawn in, and I became, you know, a shark nut. I completely fell in love with the animal. And the other part of it while there was we caught an 83-centimeter tiger shark pup. So very small. But because it was so small, the coloration on this animal was very profound. The stripes at this time were more like spots, and they were a rich purple color. And it was just this beautiful young animal. And I couldn't help but think how I was looking at this creature that was stunning, watching it swim around a pen, because we brought it back to measure it and do a workup on it before we, you know, set it free back into the wild again. But, you know, at that time, I couldn't help but thinking, well, tiger sharks are one of the sharks that are known as being a villain of the ocean. You know, how is it this animal has such a horrible reputation? Or, you know, why is it that people want to go out and kill this animal that when you're able to see it in the wild and you're able to see its movements and its coloration, you know, I couldn't fathom why anyone would want to do something to hurt that animal. And so that's when, you know, my growing passion for sharks also developed into one of shark conservation and really working to help change that public perception, because I had the opportunity to learn from some of the best, you know, shark biologists in the world. And the biggest takeaway is how important they are to our ecosystem. You know, most species of shark are apex predators, meaning they're at the top of the food chain. So they help maintain our ocean food chain, which you have a healthy ocean food chain, you have a healthy ocean. So they serve a very important role in our ecosystem, but that's not what people hear about. So really working to change that public perception. So after graduating, I started volunteering with the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy, which is a nonprofit that was founded here on Cape Cod because a group of people realized that there was a need for funding for white shark research. So here in the Cape, the white shark research is led by Dr. Greg Skomel of the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. But this is one part of his job. So, you know, to help provide more funding for to continue the research and, you know, add more research projects for white sharks here on the Cape so we could learn more about them, they needed more funds. So the nonprofit was established with that main mission to, you know, fundraise, but then also, you know, to help improve public safety as well as promote shark education so that people would start to understand, you know, well, why sharks? there's been a movement to save the whales. There's a movement to save the ocean. But what is it about sharks? And the reality is they're part of that bigger picture. You know, when you're looking at saving the ocean, you're looking at the health of our ocean and having, you know, healthy populations of sharks. And especially here in the Atlantic, a healthy population of white sharks, you know, you're really improving the health of our ocean because they are that apex predator that's going to control the food chain from the top down. So I started volunteering and really focusing to build up our education programs so that community members would have an understanding that when they heard, oh, a white shark was tagged today off of Chatham, well, what does that mean? Right. What kind of tag is being used? Why is it that we're putting a tag on a shark? So that people would understand that there are two research projects being done. We have a migration study, which is the tagging of sharks to then build an understanding of where it is that they're traveling to. And then we also have a population study where we're trying to answer that question, how many white sharks are there? So, you know, that's been a big part of my role is taking what's going on the water and providing that understanding for community members and especially youth here on the Cape so that, you know, when they go to the beach, they have an understanding of what's in the water, but also so that when they hear their parents talk about these things or when they see it on the news, they have an understanding. So it's not so much that they're scared because they hear that there was a white shark off their beach, but instead an understanding of, well, that's a wild animal. It's being found in its natural habitat. And, you know, try to get them to see that they live in a really cool area where we have this amazing flourishing ecosystem with this apex predator. So,
yeah. Just to kind of go back to the point of, you know, where, you know, for a kind of more European or kind of non-US audience who aren't kind of exposed, I guess, to a lot of, you know, the North American phenomenon of Shark Week. And, you know, it feels like there's a lot more discussion in the US than in other places about sharks. I mean, could you just kind of dig in a bit to why there's more discussion about sharks now as opposed to even a few years ago? I feel like it's more of a thing now.
Yeah. Well, I think it really, the whole shark phenomenon truly started or kind of kicked off when Jaws came out.
Right.
You know, that epic summit blockbuster really set the tone for sharks. But when that movie came out, what was really interesting is that it was first a book written by the author Peter Benchley. And after the movie came out, it kind of struck a tone with people and people were afraid to go in the water. But it also struck a tone in that people saw sharks as villains. And it kind of spearheaded this movement for shark fishing tournaments and the idea that you could prove that you're a great fisherman if you go out and you catch a monster shark and you bring it back to the dock and you hang it up. So it kind of set this tone that it was a good idea to go out and kill sharks. And what's been really interesting is when you look at Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws, he, after the movie came out and he saw how it portrayed sharks as a villain, he had a regret. You know, it was never intent to give people this idea that the shark is a villain in our ocean because he had an understanding of the shark's role in our ecosystem. So he and his wife, Wendy Benchley, then set out on a movement to, you know, be a part of shark conservation efforts and to try to change that perception and show how, you know, sharks are a vital role in our ecosystem. So right off the bat, you know, after the movie came out, there started this momentum, but I don't feel it really built up, you know, until in more recent years. You know, sharks are always something that are exciting to people. I think that that's something that's always been present. But I think at least for here on Cape Cod and in the Massachusetts region is since we've started, you know, the shark research and it's being talked about more in the news, you know, you're hearing more conversation about shark research. And so it's helped shift that public perception. But people are interested in it. You know, everyone's always had this interest in sharks, I think. You know, from my role as an education standpoint, you know, if I'm trying to engage kids in a different way, sharks are always the hook that works. You know, whether it's out of fear or out of a love, it seems that sharks are something that people think about. So it's definitely grown. And then Shark Week, the whole week-long, you know, television series with Discovery Channel brings about a lot of that excitement too. And then marketing it in the summer when people are going to the beaches, you know, it just generates that shark buzz that gets people excited.
So you don't necessarily think that it's related to the kind of seemingly kind of endless stream of kind of bad news on the conservation front in terms of numbers of species and all of this. It's not particularly related to that.
I think that part of it is, I do believe that there's more conversation now about, you know, the need to protect sharks and looking at population numbers. So I think that that's a part of it. And I think that in recent years, that's become more of the forefront of conversation around sharks, which to me shows a real positive, you know, piece in, you know, the shark conservation movement is that that wasn't always what you heard about when you heard people talking about sharks. You often heard more of that Jaws mentality, and the conversation was around fearing sharks. Now, I do believe that a lot of the conversation is around, you know, well, why sharks are important, or, you know, the numbers of sharks and why it is that we need to protect them, or why, you know, we need to take steps to make sure that we, you know, aren't diminishing their population anymore. So I think that that has become more of the conversation, which is a real positive thing.
Could you talk a little bit about your work with an involvement in the Gills Club and kind of what gap, I guess, you feel that this is filling and a bit about that?
Yeah. So the Gills Club started early on with the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy. So we had been working with a group, OSearch. They are a nonprofit organization that has a large fishing vessel that they try to tag the larger species of shark, such as white sharks. Mm-hmm. And one day out on that boat, you looked at the science team that was doing a full white shark workup, and you saw these two incredible women, Dr. Heather Marshall, who was taking blood samples from the shark, because she has done her research on the stress physiology. And then Brenda Anderson, who was doing a live ultrasound on the white shark. So you saw these two incredible women performing, you know, wonderful research that is vital to learning more about this animal. And, you know, we're looking at it and we're thinking, these are the women that you should see on Shark Week. Right. You don't often see women scientists featured on those television shows. And so we're seeing them and thinking how they should be featured for the work that they're doing and how important it is to shark conservation. But then we also, through our outreach events, kept seeing young girls who, you know, were coming in shark t-shirts, or they were coming and they were rattling off all this information that they had learned about sharks. And they were so excited about sharks. And they were saying, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be, you know, Dr. Greg Skolmal. Right. And it clicked. It said, well, you should want to grow up and be Dr. Heather Marshall. But these girls weren't seeing female biologists that they could align themselves with as a role model. So we wanted to make that connection for girls. So that's really where the basis for the Gills Club came from, and to start it up, is we wanted to connect young girls with female biologists who were working in the field to provide them with a role model as well as a resource. So what we do is we have a science team of over 80 females now from around the world who are working in, you know, shark biology or ocean conservation, who donate their time. And every month, you know, we have two biologists who are featured, and they answer a series of questions that provide background information on who they are, how they became interested in sharks or the ocean, where they went to school, so that these young girls who are meeting these scientists or reading these profiles can start to gain an understanding of what they need to do to pursue an education in that field. Right. They talk about what research institutions or internships they had that they believed helped prepare them for their field work. And then they introduce them to current ongoing research. So we're making sure that these girls are smart about sharks, that they know exactly what's going on in the moment in the latest shark research field. So that's the premise of it, is that, you know, making that introduction and providing these girls with that role model. So for younger girls, that's a hard copy newsletter that contains this information that they get mailed to them at home. Mm-hmm. It also highlights a shark species so that, you know, we're continuing to fulfill that passion or that interest in sharks. Yep. And then for our older audience, we use social media. So we have a Facebook page where the scientists themselves are creating these posts and they're sharing videos or photo evidence and they're talking about it. And our members are able to directly comment on it and ask questions. So they can obtain further information to help them guide their way. And when we started this, it was really to try to provide a role model and, you know, show young girls how they can be a female marine biologist. But what's amazing is that once we launched it, we didn't just have girls ages 7 to 12. We have women who are 60 or 72 years old who are commenting and saying, you know, it's so wonderful to see that, you know, you as a female are doing this. I was told when I was your age, I couldn't be a marine biologist because it was a field for men. So we've realized that we're even able to fulfill a passion for women who weren't able to become a marine biologist, yeah, but now they're still able to learn because of this, you know, this club that we have started. And then what we also do that we've been very fortunate is since starting it, you know, we've been able to partner up with other aquariums or marine education centers such as Moat Marine Lab in Sarasota, Florida. So one of the things we wanted to do is in areas where we had a high population of Gills Club members is bring them together. Because one of the other things that we learned is that there were girls, you know, we started receiving letters of girls who were getting picked on at school because they had a shark backpack.
Right.
And so boys were saying, you can't have that. You're a girl. So we wanted these girls to see you're not alone. There is a whole group of a shark enthusiasts, yeah, that are female. So we started hosting these events. And so the events allow for girls to come together once a month. And it's experiential education. So we start off the meeting introducing them to some sort of topic, whether it be shark anatomy or it might be the technology of the tags. And then we do a whole hands-on experience where the girls get to learn the science. They learn the technology by actually, you know, running through a scenario or having to build something. Or our most popular event is we do some shark dissections. And that is always my favorite because you see girls of all ages digging in and getting their hands dirty and this great excitement when they realize, oh, this is the heart, or, you know, they're great at the anatomy. They're picking it out and they're making the connection of, well, this is why, you know, the liver allows them to maintain neutral buoyancy. Look at how big it is. Look at how rich in oil it is.
Yeah.
Because they're right there, you know, getting their hands into it and having that experience. And then they get to go into their school and it helps them academically because they're taking concepts that they're learning in their general classes and they're having these hands-on applied experiences with it. So they're taking, you know, a biology class where they're learning about internal organs and the role of them, but then they're seeing it and they're seeing how those organs are vital to this animal. So we have actually had the feedback from some parents where they have seen an improvement in their daughter's grades in science classes since they become a Gills Club member, which is very rewarding to get that kind of feedback.
So it almost wouldn't even need to be about sharks in general. It's more about giving people experience and contact with the process, and also again these having these kind of role models and people who they're actually interacting with.
Absolutely, yeah. And it did really all start because sharks was the hook. You know, sharks was the thing that brought them all, yep, together. But we've expanded. I mean, one of the ones that I love to do with the girls is when we do a whole focus on math. And the math lesson that we're doing, you know, comes back to how we, you know, find out a population number for sharks. So we're using sharks to make it exciting. But then at the end of the day, those girls are walking out and they just performed algebra operations when some of them are only 6 years old. So we kind of hide, like, you're doing something really tricky and difficult. Yeah. But using the idea of, you know, you're learning this because it's what's used in shark research helps give them that push to really want to understand it.
do people come in maybe with an interest or at least just kind of intrigued about sharks and then maybe leave a few months or years later, let's say, with an interest in something else, maybe marine biology, maybe something else in science? Do you have that kind of situation?
Well, the Girls Club is still pretty new. So we have returning members who were just starting to see our first group really go from being, they started when they were 10 and now they're in that 13 age bracket.
Okay.
So as they're being introduced to other courses in school, we are, yes, we're hearing some conversation of, you know, some of them are seeing, well, you know, I do like marine mammals too, or, you know, so maybe I want to study whales, or I like animals in general, so I think I want to go into veterinary school. So we do see that, you know, sharks might not become their focus, but what's really great is a lot of them are still keeping science as a focus. And that's one of the things that we wanted to really do is that, you know, there is a huge lack in the amount of women who pursue a career in the STEM field. So really trying to give these girls, you know, that empowerment that they can obtain one of those careers and that they can do well in it. So, you know, trying to maintain that drive to pursue that kind of career field or that education path within a STEM field.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like a great resource in that sense. And, you know, if listeners are interested, they can go on your website and see this list of 80 plus scientists and people who are involved. It's really kind of impressive what you've gathered together.
Thank you. We often step back and are like, wow, this has grown more than we ever anticipated it to in a much quicker time frame. But it's a wonderful piece to be a part of, and especially when we hear the feedback from parents or from girls or, you know, Dr. Heather Marshall, who's one of the co-founders, when she went down to the American Elasma Brain Society conference in New Orleans this past year. You know, one of the things that she's really noticed is that she has scientists approaching her who have an interest to become a science team member.
Right.
So it's not just, you know, that we're attracting girls who want to learn about sharks, but we're also attracting female biologists who want to share what it is that they've learned, and they want to be a part of this science team that's giving back to the next generation of ocean stewards. And that's really amazing to see that, you know, that's what we've created is something that these scientists want to be a part of.
Just to return to sharks a little bit, listeners of this podcast may be surprised to know that there are certain sharks that have Twitter accounts. In fact, I'll link to a post you wrote back in April about this. Could you kind of describe what's going on there? Why is it interesting?
So one of the things that's interesting to me is when I first got involved with the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy is the sharks didn't really have names. They were cataloged by their tag number.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as people were growing more and more interested, you know, WS32356 doesn't have the same fit as, you know, White Shark Charlie. I also think that, you know, with the growing fascination and the continued news reports of what's going on, you know, by providing a name for these sharks, it helps to build a stronger connection.
Yep.
So people, and again, I think it's a memory piece, is that, you know, last year we had a white shark, Jameson, who stranded himself off of Cape Cod. So, you know, the shark came up and it beached itself. They were able to rescue it, bring it back. But so everyone remembers Jameson, you know, that name, whereas if it was White Shark, you know, 3234, I don't think it would stick as much with people. But so then we got data, you know, this past winter that Jameson was off the coast of South Carolina, and it came right back to people, you know, oh, Jameson, that was the shark that stranded itself off of Chatham. So the names, I think, build a stronger connection for people to continue to follow the research and have that understanding of which shark has been known for doing what. And then the whole social media aspect of it, a lot of those accounts have been created by, you know, private individuals who are following the shark research. And they've picked up these Twitter accounts and, you know, are running them as, you know, sharks that have been tagged and are named. And it is an interesting thing to watch because, you know, they're saying, oh, I'm White Shark Mary Lee, and this is where I just pinged in today. So if people aren't following, you know, one of the tracking apps, they are able to, you know, but they're a social media person, they're still able to follow and understand, oh, well, this is where this shark has traveled to. Wow. The last time they pinged in, they were off of this coast. Look at how far they traveled. And it just keeps the conversation going in a positive way, centered around the research and what it is we're learning about these sharks as we're learning about them.
I mean, it seems, I kind of looked into it a little a while back, it seems that there are all sorts of different kind of methodologies and kind of outfits, tagging sharks and different approaches and so on. Do we have a lot more to learn by kind of tagging more sharks? You know, is the value to come from this, again, just realizing that there are kind of individuals with certain habitats and so on, or is this really kind of expanding our knowledge of sharks and just marine biology in general?
So I think for me to answer that one, that question, I've got to stick to the white sharks here in the Atlantic.
Yep.
'Cause the best example that I can give is early on when the Mass Division of Marine Fisheries started tagging the white sharks under Dr. Greg Skomel's lead. You know, Dr. Skomel thought that the white sharks that were visiting the Cape every year were snowbirds, that they were coming to the Cape in the summer months when it was warm, and then they were heading down to Florida in the winter months when it got cold up here.
Yeah.
And, you know, after he tagged a few sharks, that was the trend he started observing. And then he tagged some more sharks. And the next thing we know, they got a call from some researchers up in Canada who pulled a receiver out of the water and said, hey, we have one of your tags on our receiver. What kind of animal is this? And with great surprise, they all said, that's one of our white sharks. So they were able to, you know, the more sharks they tagged, the greater the distance and travel they saw them going. And they quickly realized, well, the white sharks aren't snowbirds. Some are going to Florida, but some are going north to Canada. So they're going in different directions. So the more sharks we tag, the more we learn about those migration patterns. As well as, you know, the acoustic tags, we can obtain data from them for about 10 years. So trying to identify, is there a pattern in their travel? Because white sharks here in the Atlantic, we really don't know much about. We don't know where it is that they're going to mate. We don't know where it is that the females are giving birth. So trying to identify some of those areas is something we're looking to do. But even, you know, one of the big questions that hasn't been answered as well was, how many white sharks are there? And that's, you know, a question that Dr. Skomel was often saying, I'm not sure. And so 2.5 years ago, he started the population study, which allows them, what he does is they go in and they put a GoPro in the water and they take a body scan of the shark to try to pick out any identifying features that mark that shark as an individual.
Yeah.
So oftentimes they look around the gill slits or they might look on the fins of the shark so they can mark the shark and ID it. And to date, they have about 190 individuals that they've ID'd within the last 2.5 years. We won't have a population estimate until another 2.5 years. It takes 5 years for this study, but this is a big part of it as well. So there's a lot we're still trying to learn to have a better understanding of this animal.
It was amazing when I started reading and learning more about sharks, how many kind of blind spots or blank spots there are in our knowledge. Is that simply just a result of the lack of funding and attention that's been given, or is it just something, the nature of the environment, that it's harder to access? Obviously the ocean is a huge environment or habitat to kind of monitor. What's behind that?
It's a little bit of both. White sharks are a very large animal, and you know, within the recent few years that we've had predictable access to them. You know, white sharks have been a part of the ecosystem off of Cape Cod, but the change that has occurred is we have had an increase in our seal population. And the seals are the primary food source for these white sharks off of Cape Cod. And so the seals are hauling out on beaches. And so the sharks are going into more shallow water to pursue them. And because they're going into more shallow water, we're able to work with them. So we work with a spotter pilot who's able to put the research boat right on the shark so they can either try to apply a tag or get that underwater footage. So we're able to increase what we're doing now because we have better access to them. But previously, that was a big reason for the gaps in the knowledge, is that we did not have predictable access to white sharks to conduct some sort of research study for a long-term effort. But then the other part is absolutely the funding, is that science is expensive. And, you know, there's always a need for the funding to continue these projects. And that's where, you know, establishing the nonprofit came in. And that's the biggest role of the nonprofit, is to continue to obtain funding so this research can continue and we can continue to learn more about this animal.
Does the future of the kind of funding of research on sharks, does that look more like a kind of, smaller scale models with, crowdfunding and things like that? Or is it more kind of large scale institutional funding? Or do you have any sense of where the trend is, or if there is one?
I think one of the big things is, you know, when you're doing the crowdfunding, it's hard because it's not predictable. When you have a nonprofit established, I believe that can help continue consistent funding, ideally or hopefully. That one's kind of hard to answer.
Yeah, sure.
I apologize, because for me, especially, as I said earlier, as the education director, you know, I see the importance of the funding and continuing the funds, but that's not a part that I necessarily manage.
Right. I mean, it would seem to me, at least on some level, despite maybe kind of ethical issues around it, it seems to me that there would be a certain amount of knowledge about sharks within the fishing industry as well. Are there kind of collaborations and, you know, ways in which the knowledge which the fishing industry, which perhaps firstly has a kind of financial interest in knowing more about shark habitats, let's say, or at least the fishes in their particular areas where they're working, is that kind of thing going on?
Yeah, so that is one of the things too that is interesting, is that a lot of people don't realize. So Dr. Skomal works for the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries, and, you know, white sharks are the research that everyone talks about. But, you know, under the Division of Marine Fisheries, there are other shark research projects going on.
Yep.
And previously, he's done work with John Chisholm, another member of the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries, on basking sharks, on sand tiger sharks. You know, one of the commercial fisheries here off of Cape Cod is spiny dogfish shark, which is a small species of shark. So they are looking at other species within the fisheries as well.
Obviously, the kind of the activities that the Gills Club and the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy, to some extent, that kind of focuses a little bit on the USA, and maybe even more specifically on the kind of Cape Cod area. But if you learn about sharks a little bit, you obviously realize that they travel all over the place without very much regard for border lines and so on. And I'm sure, as your kind of social media presence enlarged, you started to have people interested from all over the world. Is engaging in that kind of global dimension going to be more part of your future work, or is that how you see yourself even now, as a way of kind of engaging on that global level as well?
Well, it's definitely, you know, one of the reasons why when they chose the name for the nonprofit, Atlantic White Shark Conservancy, that they went that way, is because, you know, we are focusing on white sharks here in the Atlantic. And we have that realization that that doesn't mean that they're just sticking to the Cape Cod coast, but that they are expanding and that they're moving all around the Atlantic Ocean. And so trying to, you know, keep people up to date with that information, whether it be that they're following the sharks here when they're here off Cape Cod, or, you know, in the winter months when some of them go down off of Florida. So, you know, our reach, we've realized, is, you know, beyond Cape Cod. And since the nonprofit has grown, And, you know, the conversation around shark conservation has also grown and seems to be spreading. We see ourselves expanding, and it's wonderful to obtain feedback and hear how in other countries people are becoming engaged and they're looking at what's going on. But this is also conversations that are happening in other parts of the world. You know, you look at some of the other hotspots, Guadalupe Island, where, you know, there's a known population of white sharks, or South Africa. So there are other networks of shark researchers and organizations that are doing similar work in other parts of the world. And we do talk with those organizations and try to collaborate and discuss with them on how our research compares to what they're doing down there. So that conversation is being had globally. But as we continue to grow with our nonprofit, we do hope to see, you know, this mission spread.
And I mean, in terms of that kind of next generation, which to some extent you're helping foster, create, what are the needs in terms of research on sharks? Is it a question of needing having more people to go out on expeditions? Is it a question of having data analysts to make better understand what's being gathered? Is it, you know, finding people who can communicate what's being learned? Is it having more fundraising? What are the major needs that you would see?
I think that it's all of those things truly go hand in hand. You know, when you look at the mission statement for the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy, it's to promote or fundraise for white shark research. And reason for that is the more we have an understanding of this animal, the more we know, you know, where it's traveling to, the times when it's traveling there, the numbers that are out there, you know, are there spots where they seem to be congregating or we're seeing them more? Because when we have that kind of information, then we can sit down and we can, you know, the Conservancy is part of a shark working group because Cape Cod is a very popular tourist destination. So we have people who are coming here to use these beaches where white sharks are being seen and they're swimming right along that coastline. So we work with local harbor masters. We work with local town officials. We work with the National Seashore and the park rangers who work there. So, you know, we take that research and we use that knowledge to make decisions within the shark working group. But then at the same time, one of the big things is educating the public. So putting pieces out there so that they can gain an understanding about what this animal is, you know, why they need to be aware when they go in the water and things that they can do to be shark smart, actions that they can take. So all of those things go hand in hand.
Right. Just as a kind of penultimate question, obviously, you've been involved in kind of education and working with young people in order to kind of both kind of communicate things, but also to foster their curiosity and so on. Do you have a are there any practices, kind of best practices that for others trying to work in an education field that you have found really useful or that have worked or that have allowed you to kind of pursue the specific goals with relating to kind of shark research?
One of the things that I have always held as being important to me to do. And I've worked with kids in many aspects, not just with sharks, but being completely honest and real with them so that they have a full reality of the understanding. And, you know, especially with what's going on here with the white sharks and working with local kids, when they say, well, I go swimming off of this beach, are there sharks there? You know, my answer is yes. You know, and not trying to kind of sugarcoat things, but, you know, giving them the straight facts so that they have that understanding themselves. I also really believe in exposing the kids to the research. And you have to adjust the levels and how you explain it.
Yep.
But, you know, bringing them, and again, it comes back to, for me, you know, we see a lot of press on what's going on here. So I want kids when, you know, they're watching the news with their parents and they say, oh, they tagged a shark today. for those kids to have the understanding, oh, well, they used an acoustic tag and it works for the receiver that's deployed in the water. So bringing, you know, directly what's being used into a classroom or into a presentation so the kids have that understanding. And that, again, so when they hear this stuff on the news, it's not, oh my gosh, there was a shark. Instead, it's a click of, oh, I know what kind of tag that is and I know how that works. You know, it changes how they hear and perceive this information.
Great, thank you. Finally, we generally kind of on the podcast like to ask guests to come up with three picks: a book, a film, and a song or a piece of music. I was wondering if you've had a chance to have a think about that.
I have.
So, what would be your book?
My book is The Soul of an Octopus by Cy Montgomery. It was a book that was recommended to me, and I was teaching in a classroom this past year, and it took way longer to read it than I would have liked, but it was a wonderful book that provided me a whole insight to the marine invertebrate, the octopus, and I just recently got to meet the author, Cy Montgomery, who is truly wonderful, and it was an amazing read. I learned a great deal from it.
Great. And a film?
I am a huge Avengers nerd, so I am still caught up on Captain America: Civil War. I've seen it several times now.
Okay, I'm presuming there's no shark theme in that film.
No, there's no sharks in that film.
And for a song or a piece of music?
The new Justin Timberlake song,
okay.
Can't Stop That Feeling. It seems to always put me in a good mood.
Excellent. That's a good place to leave it there, I think. How can people stay in touch with you and your work and so on and find you online?
So the Conservancy uses all forms of social media. So on Facebook, you can go ahead and like the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy. Or if you have interest in the Gills Club, you can join the Facebook group, the Gills Club. But then on our other social media, we have @A_WhiteShark for Twitter and Instagram. Or if anyone has further questions for me, they can find me on Twitter and Instagram as @MarianneCLong.
Great. Marianne, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast and talk about the work that you and your associated organizations are doing.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. This was a great way for us to build our outreach, and I hope I answered everything okay.
Thank you.
For our listeners, if you heard a reference to something, a book, a website, or an article, the full show notes with links to everything we talked about in the show can be found at sourcesandmethods.com. If you enjoyed what you heard this week and in previous episodes, please consider writing a review of the show in iTunes or on Twitter or in real life. Thanks for listening.